Cast. I'm Andrew Mean, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello.
And Papa Smurf, Justin Robert Young.
That's me. I have a nebulous relationship to all the other Smurfs in terms of heritage.
Am I their father? Am I their sibling? Nobody knows.
Why am I acting paternal to the one female? troubling questions. As Andrew often says in fiction writing, if this is true, what else is true?
How is the newest edition of the Weird Things family, Justin?
Bella may or may not have done her first social smile about an hour and a half ago.
So
she's been working toward it slowly. But I think she might have done it only an hour and a half ago. And it's been actually amazing these last few days because we might talk about it in after things, but it's been a pretty stressful week. Now that things are kind of calming down a little bit, I have, you know, more time to just sort of be around the baby, which is, just like the whole, like the point of life. It's amazing.
So question is, how does it feel? Given that a human, as I understand theoretically, a human can be capable of like inventing things like cures, computers, becoming a world leader, a religious figure, or a serial killer. Mm-hmm. What's it like to have that, a mass murderer even, what's it like to have that responsibility as a parent, knowing that any of those outcomes possible?
Well, if she's a mass murderer, the good chance is I probably go first. And if that's the case, then this is everybody else's problem, not mine, whether or not, you know, no matter what kind of job I do. It's going to be interesting because she's still very much in the food processing phase where she's just kind of adorable, but it's mostly food goes in and then food comes out. And otherwise, the only question is whether or not she's sleeping or awake and whether or not we have to be soothing her. But, once she's about to get into the pattern recognition stage, and then past that, we get into more understanding and mimicking social stuff, at which point I'll really have a problem on my hands. I'm going to have to actually like take stock of my own behavior. And I've actually thought more and more about like how much I'm on my phone because as we all are just addicted to our devices, whenever we're bored, we pick up the slate that makes us not bored and we can justify it by saying, well, it's work and I'm doing this and I got to keep attention on X, Y, and Z. But I also know that it's probably not helpful for her to constantly see me on my phone. And I probably should have some kind of boundaries when she is around. And so I'm right now just at the phase where I'm feeling bad for myself about being on the phone around her. I haven't made any personal changes, but we'll see whether or not those changes are affected as she gets older and starts recognizing things.
Yeah, she'll find reasons to hate you. Don't worry. Don't worry.
Yeah. Well, no, this is more in I don't want her to be like me, and not even like in a sense that I don't want her to be like me as an adult. I don't want her to be like me in that she's going to demand a tablet or a phone at an earlier age. I need to keep, I don't know. I want to do more and more talking with the ChatGPT voice assistant because I would rather her just, you know, be on the phone with Auntie, Chatty G than looking at a tablet and just hitting the like Jerry's Balloons games from Rick and Morty.
We'll see. Not a small amount of responsibility there.
No, a lot of pressure to screw this one up.
Well, speaking of somebody else who knows a lot about parenting and technology, Elon Musk did the We Robot event last night.
I know nothing about this.
Have you not seen this? Yeah, this was pretty wild. It was all over social media last night. I assume it was out in Texas. I think he's most of the Teslas. It was in California?
Warner Brothers Studio. That was the world famous Warner Brothers backlot.
Oh, I was wondering whether or not they built something like that. But yeah, it makes a lot more sense that it was the WB backlot.
They were probably intending to combine it with a We Did It mission accomplished party for the success of Joker 2, you know, to save their studio.
Yeah.
I was actually curious to your opinion on this, Andrew, because the big announcement was his robot, which he says at scale will cost about $30,000 and can be
Robotaxi.
No, not the physical humanoid robot thing.
Did he announce a price? Because they said the price for the robo.
He said, maybe it was just a thing I saw online mm-hmm. that it was at scale. And obviously that's not now. It's certainly not initially that at scale, it would cost anywhere between $30,000 and $40,000 for the robot man. But that seemed more concept car than anything else, but they certainly were debuting them. They were walking around and serving drinks and dancing all the robots.
I watched it and I thought he only announced the price for the robot, the cyber cab. So the big reveal is the cyber cab. I don't know that he's announced a price for the robot.
It was not a price announcement. I think it was just him musing on what it would cost.
No. I watched the thing and he was musing about the cyber taxi.
I saw the wrong thing online. I apologize. Okay.
No, I mean, I may be correct. I may have missed it because I will say, the live stream, there were stuff that came out in videos after. It's like, oh, the camera wasn't there, whatever. I think we're both correct that it was actually 20 to 30 for the Optimist and 30 to 40 or whatever for the Robotaxi.
The Robotaxi, were there limitations on the announcement? I would love to hear the official line on what they were pitching on the Robotaxi.
Do we want to do the robot man first or the robot taxi?
Well, because I think the robot man, what else to that?
Yeah, I think because you've talked a lot about how robotics are really going to be a gigantic part that we had barely seen pop up above the surface in this kind of AI revolution. You've been very, very vocal on that. And this Optimus product is. Yeah,
the walking was great. The walking was much better. I don't know if we have video to show that they did. He did it.
Yeah, we're scrolling down. I'm seeing it for the first time, and this Verge has some animated GIFs, and it right now it's just handing out drinks. But the nuance, like the balance compensatory actions that it's making to maintain its balance, give it this like for example, you see the thumb at one point, kind of unnecessarily wiggle left and wiggle right, but then you realize that humans do that to keep their hands presenting well. It's those the interstitial frames, like right there. Did you see the thumb kind of wiggle left and right? It's just amazing. It really looks like a dude in a costume.
Yeah. So the event was technically, scenically, was amazing because they went and they took Warner Brothers and they went and they put all this neon, all this made it look like this futuristic city. They lit up all the buildings and the set and all that. And then they did several announcements. The major ones was the Robotaxi, the Optimus, and then also the Robovan. But on the Optimus thing, there's a shot you're looking at right here where they walked out. That was really that was actually, it was a much smoother walkout than we'd seen before. So I'm trying to see if we can find any video of that. Cause I really want you to see that the walking. Oh, I found a link to it.
Oh, great.
Let me send it to you.
Okay. Let me, I'll open up my email so that I can jump over to that, but go ahead. The walking, just like the nuance of the hand movements, I assume that the walking was a little bit herky jerky. The first time that we saw it, when it looked like a chassis open homemade PC.
Yeah. So here I sent you a link so you can see that, but yeah, it was the overall was a very interesting event. Like I said, there was a lot of camera go here, cut to here, Elon talking about a thing, and then everybody start to applaud because something is happening over there. And then, hey, a thing happens here. And so, I was a little confused by what I was seeing here, as you can see.
Has been, because I remember I did watch the Cybertruck event live, and it was very much the same. Like, not even the host seemed to be able to know where the action should be. But we're seeing them walk out right now, and yeah, they're moving in almost lockstep unison.
You notice the walking isn't the old man walk that it had before of the weird crouchy. This is it's a much more improved gait. They got criticized when they first showed Optimus because they were using like decade old sort of walking algorithm, where this is a much more smooth walk.
It does still have kind of a rigid back structure. Like it looks like somebody tweaked their back.
Brian.
Oh, no. Look, I'm not bagging on. I'm trying to draw a visual image for the audio listeners. But it looks like it has the full mobility of somebody who's just wearing a back brace and has to keep their back, rigid. Yeah.
So I'm seeing on Twitter, I don't know whether or not it's legitimate, but at least it's everybody saying the same thing, is that Elon says at scale it'll be $20,000 to $30,000 available in 2026.
Yeah, and it was 30 something or more, whatever it was, for the taxi. That was the thing I was confused about, was the price on that. So yeah, 20 to 30, which, you know, given the track record now, it'll be 80.
and available in 2 years. Although that will probably be different with the way everything's getting faster.
Yeah, I'm short-term skeptical, long-term bullish. Still have a position in Tesla. Justin, what did you think?
I mean, it looked incredible. If it is what it says it is, and I think mostly by your point of view, I have become more and more long-term bullish on robotics in an age of AI that I think we are about to see a evolutionary leap forward with what we believe is possible in the world of robotics, of physical robotics, with the capabilities that we've seen with large language models. So like, and just machine learning in general. So it makes sense to me. I think, 20,000 to 30,000, let's imagine that it's there, maybe even double that. I mean, I could see a world in which, you finance one of these things, and it's if it does what it says it does in terms of being a robot butler, for your life. I could see it being incredibly popular. Musk said among the three things that he announced last night, this would be the biggest product ever and the backbone to a world of a global boom. It makes sense. I mean, it looks amazing. Yeah, to the point where Brian, the first thing I saw was the clip online of Musk getting into the robo-taxi, and he walks out with Optimus.
I thought, we don't know.
Well, okay. Well, then that's what I don't know. I thought it was a man in a suit.
Yeah.
And so then I saw, that's the first thing I saw. Then I saw everything else from there, and I'm like, oh, was that really a thing? I don't know.
Yeah, he walked out with something in a SpaceX suit, but I think the spacesuit, I think that was just a person because it looked like it walked out faster. I don't know. I would be delighted to be completely wrong. So I'd be delighted to be wrong.
That was my initial thought. And then I saw all the other clips of the robots dancing and serving drinks and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, okay. I mean, it shows you that Tesla is a company that is pushing forward with innovation. And obviously Elon post Twitter acquisition, and really post him posting on Twitter a lot, has become an extraordinarily divisive figure, to the point where I think people want to erase some of the things that he has an unquestionably remarkable track record on, and that is SpaceX and Tesla, and we have seen, and Starlink, and we've seen over the last just month and a half, just remarkable leaps and marks of reliability from all of those. Starlink helping with the rural cleanup with Hurricane Helene in North Carolina, that really shows some of the benefits of that kind of internet solution. Obviously SpaceX rescuing two astronauts that had been stranded in space because their product is more reliable. And now the future focused element of what Tesla can do, both in terms of Optimus, which is a huge step forward in terms of what we would think of as, Tesla's purview, but also with I'm sure we're going to talk about now, the robo bus and the robo taxi, or cyber bus and robo taxi.
Yeah. I think that, it's a very Elon causes chaos for sure. We've long described him and other people as mules in the Isaac Asimov Foundation sort of terminology. I think he has an incredible ability to attract talent. And I think that's really right now, to make things work, you need money, you need talent. And
Right on cue. Yeah, I guess it's Friday afternoon, so Spectrum feels the need to give me some sass. Andrew, just so you know, Spectrum is doing their Friday afternoon dance, but this time I'm smart enough to fill the dead air knowing that there'll be two or three of these. I guess I'll call them again later, but it seems like you're back on track. I'll just jump in and fill if it happens again.
All right. Starlink, Brian. Starlink.
It's getting there. Like, I don't even know that I care about the latency anymore. It's just, I want
the minimal. The latency is so negligible.
And certainly, like, if you're not, you know, high end gaming, I'm sure it's fine. But for Zoom stuff, how much does Starlink cost per month?
Oh, and something like that.
Are there bandwidth restrictions or caps or anything?
I would have to go. Pull
yeah,
that up.
Should we get a rep on? You want to call it?
I'm about ready to, man. We'll cover it live on the air, man.
Yeah. I'm excited about the potential. I think that robotics are going to, you know, we said before, they're gonna, in the next 5 years, we're very quickly, you know, you'd see like Unitree makes like bipedal things you can buy and stuff, the quality that's questionable, but we'll see. I think that within 5 years' time, you'll be able to buy something for about $20,000. And I think the price will fall a lot too. That they'll actually be useful in your house. Because like you see some of these demos and it's like, it's carefully, like in the thing, it's like carefully handing out packages and they're putting these trays in front of it precisely, which they'll get better. They'll get way, way better. And, you know, to the point when I know I can sit here and I can say, hey, can you go grab me a Diet Coke? And it can open up the doors, walk down the stairs, go into another room and grab a soda out of the fridge and bring it up to me.
Well, done. Think about how many parts of that scenario just 2 years ago would have seemed like impossibly difficult, but suddenly our child's play and trivial. Like, for example, the natural language way in which you portrayed asking for a Diet Coke, like, hey, bring me a Diet Coke. It'd be all like, oh, what if you mumble? You'd have to say, voice assistant, get Coke, playing the Beatles. No, get Coke and all that stuff. That all of a sudden is nothing. And now we've seen... Now we're at the part where we're going to be fussing about battery life.
Yeah. You think about, as you look at the robot, you see where that is. And you think about how far ahead, as you said, where these language models are, where you have a conversation in ChatGPT in advance. It's human-like. The Turing test is no longer really talks about it because it's like, we just passed that. If I brought this back in time 10 years ago, the top experts in the world would insist that this was a thing 50 years away. And here we are now. And then you think about, okay, that level of reasoning applied to locomotion to understand where its hand is in space, what it needs to grab. The rest is, you know, we use this phrase a lot. The rest is engineering. And even with, we'll talk about this now. We'll finish the talk with this. We'll talk about kind of the O1 model again. But I think robotics is here. It's happening fast. It's only a matter of time before you get them in your house doing practical stuff. And you might have an indoor robot. You might have an outdoor robot, something that's outside that just walks around and does, you know, that's more rain, you know, waterproof, rainproof, rugged, whatever.
It's I don't think until just in the last 3 minutes it had occurred to me that the Turing test itself now seems utterly foolish. Something that I had heard about most of my entire life suddenly seems like a really dumb way to evaluate whether or not something is AI, because we are on the other side of the Turing test and nobody believes that AI is conscious at all.
Well, that was the whole point of the Turing test, was saying that sentience or consciousness is a silly thing because you can't objectively measure it. The only thing we can measure is what somebody responds to or says. And then now the big step is, how well do these agents behave in embodied, either within, by giving control of my browser or my computer, can it do all the work that I can do? If I give it a physical body, can it do useful work? And now we're going to be defining what's useful work, whatever. But yeah. I think those things happen quickly. So the other announcements.
Yes.
Robotaxi.
So I was I have not paid a ton of attention to it, aside from people retweeting the live stream or pictures from the event itself. What is Robotaxi, a Tesla competitor to like Waymo, or is it a thing that we are that I can buy and then just make money on? I can send forth my Robotaxi.
And sorry, yeah, you called it cyber van, which is the cyber cab, which is the correct term. I don't know why I want to call it a robo taxi. But so in theory, what it is he Elon talked about where somebody could own a fleet of these, you know, a Uber driver can instead own several of these things. He says it could be like a shepherd and send them out and take care of them. But the idea that you could buy these things around 30K and basically put them, deploy them into different areas, cities, locations, whatever, and then they also showed a robotic vacuum cleaner going in and cleaning the thing out to do it automatically and cleaning the windshield and stuff, which I thought was another thought. But yeah, that's the idea. And they showed these videos of what would happen if you started removing all the cars from cities and turning, you know, turning parking lots into parks, as Elon says, getting rid of the ing lot. And you have, you know, it was a very visual graphics to sort of show this idea of like, yeah, they show like Dodger Stadium or whatever. Like, what if you just could turn all that parking lot into park and whatnot? And, you know, he does this math where he's like, ah, like, you know, average cars only use like 18 hours a week. You know, what if you could get to use it 10 times as much? Well, also average cars used it 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. So yeah, there is sort of like a capacity limit to what you can do there. But it is a very interesting idea that, you know, as we start to transition more towards autonomous transportation, I use Waymo all the time in SF. Like I've used Waymo, you know, I used it last week at the Dev Day event, picked me up in front of my hotel, drove me all the way to the event. And
how fast does it go? Can you describe like from an Andrew point of view, what that's like? Cause I've never ridden in anything that fully was driving itself, I don't think.
So imagine car.
Okay. All right. No.
Hey, imagine now. Hold on. No. Right. I'm not done. Imagine you get into a car, but the driver does not have a Bluetooth in his ear.
Oh, yeah.
Is not watching international soccer on his phone on the side. Is not, you know, blasting, you know, some
music from a culture that you're not familiar with. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. You know, there's not the smell of like overpowering smell of different perfumes or whatever. You get in there and it's just you inside of a car. And it's colorful. It's nice. Remember the whole JetBlue and the was it Virgin America airplanes when they would do all the lighting inside, mood lights, all that. It's you sit inside of there. The first minute or two, you're like, oh my God, you know, the car is driving itself. And then like everybody has the same experience. Like, okay, back to my phone. And you're done and you're out.
So Brian, you know, in Austin, Waymo is available, but the zone goes down to Ben White at its most south, and at its most north, it's like Hyde Park.
You guys, so I want you field trip. You guys got to go do Waymo.
I don't have access yet. I'm still on the wait list for Austin. I think that they're waiting until they expand to where my house is that they're going to put me on the wait list. But I want to, just so I'll go downtown just so I can go somewhere else in downtown in a Waymo.
I mean, that's exactly what I want to do. I didn't even know there was a wait list. I guess I'll punch
get
that
on
in
it, dog. Get on it.
It doesn't go highway speeds, does it? No, of course not. It's got to be.
Can Ebenezer Maine Scrooge tell you the best part about it? The best part about it?
Please.
Yes.
You get to the end, your ride's done.
No
you're
tip.
Not asked to tip.
Yeah.
And I tip well. I generously tip. But if I have an option between a service that just gets a thing done, I'm going to choose that. And so you get to the end and it's like, hey, we're done. Like, click it. Like, do you want a tip? There's no, because it's a robot. Like, no, sorry. You know,
there is by the way, I do, for the audio listeners, the visual is stunning. We have three middle-aged men who are extolling the virtues of a brave new world of abundance, a Shangri-La that's just around the corner, and all three of us are wearing the exact same uniform as we as we wait for the for the ascension.
Slimming black t-shirts.
This, the day of the great comet sighting. This is October 11th as we record this, and just after sunset, there's going to be hopefully a gorgeous comet visible to the naked eye.
Oh, I forgot about that. I'll check that out. So robo-taxi, very interesting idea. Cyber-taxi. I think it's a fascinating idea that you have that other people explore, but the idea of letting independent people, whatever, buy them will be interesting. We'll see what, where that business plan pans out. I think, you know, Waymo and some of the other ones building stuff are onto a very interesting idea. And that is, like, instead of having a car that has to drive everywhere, have a car that drives a predetermined route. Elon mentioned something else, which was about the computers in them. He said, you know, we may put them, make them more powerful than they need to be. Because he said, you know, think about this. If we have a car just sitting there, we could use it if we had 100, because if we have 100 million of these, think of all the compute we have, because he's obviously thinking about training data and being able to do inference and everything else like that. And I do think that's, I think people are going to start, that's a whole nother conversation to have about, people are going to start thinking about idle processors and stuff and how you want to utilize them. So that was interesting. He mentions that the car does completely inductive charging, and that basically that there's just no port thing get plugged into, just, you know, basically a pad that connects, you just touches the surface of something and charges it, which I thought was an interesting notion. The car itself, the cyber taxi, looks like it's a two-seater. It was funny because they watched the video of the people afterwards going to, like, get into the cyber cars, and you see a dad with, like, two kids.
Yeah. Oh, no.
To look at this. And it was just a very brief kind of thing. Like, there are two kids with them, and it's like,
whoops.
Ah, you know. we'll see.
I'll tell you, the suicide doors on it look amazing. Like, it is an extraordinarily stylish automobile. Yeah. And it is certainly in the same design language as the Cybertruck, which has been beat up for the way that it looks. But this is something that looks incredibly sleek, and it looks awesome when the suicide doors pop up.
It's they're kind of like a butterfly. They're not like the gullwing doors that you think of in a DeLorean or a Model X. They go forward and up, and they look awesome. I had a question, but then I lost it. Never mind.
Well, the other reveal was they showed the RoboVan, which was, I'm like, man, this is like a Sharper Image catalog item from 1995 for, like, either vacuum, a dustbuster, or holding your CDs. So the design felt a bit more 90s retro than forward progressive, but still the idea that they want to build a robotic van that can carry 20 people or cargo.
It's interesting. The photo that I'm seeing here looks very 1920s Art Deco modernist.
Yeah, no, it looks like the Rocketeer has a gigantic man bun.
Not to draw too many inferences, but
when it gets bigger, I think it loses that kind of the sleekness.
Well, in the thumbnail, it does look like, I don't want to draw too much of a parallel, but it does look very Atlas Shrugged, which is exactly what I would expect from the founder of the new Galt's Gulch.
I mean, I wish I wish when you look at the bigger ones, it really flat fall. Because at first I'm like, oh yeah, that angle like really looks like the 1930s thing. But then you see the thing and it feels more kind of blocky and Sharper Image CD holder kind of thing.
Yeah. Oh, I did.
But this is the general idea though. Here is that if we are all in on autonomous, right? If we are all in on full self driving, then yes, you want, for the 20 something on the go or the commute person, a two person vehicle is sufficient, but there are a lot of situations where you want higher capacity. And so this is the solution for that, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, because
in a scene straight out of The Fifth Element, they have a diner car pull up and just, you know, it's a restaurant right there for you.
Yeah, you think about, like, if you want to get from, you know, your airport to the hotel, you know, you can contract to the service that provides a driver and provides all that. But, you know, you could see a company where they could say, listen, like, yeah, we're going to have a fleet of 10 of these. They're going to be just completely distributed based upon flight times, hotel capacity, et cetera. You start to get into, when you can provide transportation for people like packets, you know,
yeah,
you all of a sudden a lot of interesting things become possible. You know, growing up in South Florida, I was always impressed by, and part of the reason it worked was, you know, we had the Air Sea Show, right? Which was one, they'd say it's the largest outdoor event in the world, which probably not true, but still a huge, huge, huge event. Part of the advantage of the Air Sea Show was that, where did it take place? Well, in the air and the sea. So the viewing area was several miles long, you know, which meant that you had all these interests and egress points to get to the event, because instead of just having like one or two roads that get bottlenecked, like when you're going to see a, you know, a sports event or whatever. But, and you think about that too, it's like, oh yeah, I could see how I could create a modular transportation network on the fly for a big event, you know, Comic-Con coming or whatever. It's like, oh, okay, yeah, we're going to have a bunch of robo vans picking people up from the airport, dropping them off at this parking lot here. And then you can go pick up a cyber taxi from there and go to your hotel. Like, you could create an ad hoc transportation network, and it only has to exist for a day, and then it's done. And those things go off to other cities, other places.
So I recovered that, that flyaway thought from earlier. You mentioned that the idle compute capability could be something that would be recovered like during charging times for vehicles. Mm-hmm. Extrapolating that, if that's true, then what else is true? It occurs to me that I can picture 20, 30 years from now that it'll be kind of unconscionable or socially inappropriate to heat your house with anything other than compute power. Like, why are you not solving cancer while you're heating your house? I wonder how many other, like, okay, what you want is a warm house, but along the way, if you're going to heat the house, you might as well do it. You might as well sort the universe while you're at it.
Well, the challenge gets in there is, while a rack or two of high-end, so OpenAI got a delivery a couple days ago from NVIDIA, and it's this Blackwell, their latest NVIDIA processor, right? The problem is that the amount of compute to heat your house is going to be worth a lot more than your house.
Yeah.
You know, so if you think about like the processors and what it's going to take, like if you're, you know, they're hot, but you know, per chip, they're so exceedingly expensive towards that. Like, if you think about what that chip costs to do that.
Sure. Well, and in theory, it'll be like most of these things. The first early adopters will be participating in a gimmick, you know, but eventually I wonder if, like, for example, let's say you need your house to be warm all the time. So in theory, a house is built with, and there already are places where they have pipes with running water that warm everything up. Really, that turns your entire house into a heat sink. And I don't know, there's some crazy, this is wacky concept stuff that I'm thinking of.
No, I get you. I'm just saying that like the challenge is that per watt of heat, whatever generated by a chip, you're talking about, you know, $150,000 chip.
Right.
In that you put them into data centers because of throughput and bandwidth and whatever. So the heat is like the energy cost is the least expensive part, or the least valuable thing you're throwing away.
This is the black box I would have to introduce to get around that. Is I could imagine the possibility. I can't tell you what it is because I'm not smart, but I could imagine the possibility that there's some kind of blockchain mining operation that offsets that cost. Like, all of a sudden, not something as simple or dumb as Bitcoin, but you know, something valuable where it's like, we want more of these.
I guess I'm just saying, I don't, again, we could go down the rabbit hole on this, but like the GPUs are so expensive. The GPUs themselves are so catastrophically expensive, and you keep them data centers for a reason because of, you know, one, the throughput bandwidth, it's our data center, et cetera. And certainly for distributed computing, the heat generation given it is just, you know, would be worth pennies compared to the compute value of that. But to the point of like getting the point of saying that people having like, if you saying like giving value out of everything you have in your network, like, yeah, you can run really capable models on your iPhone. And there are people who are doing like, yeah, we're doing blockchain things on phones and stuff, which were really horrible because all they did was just turn, you know,
fossil fuels.
Into imaginary money and wasteful. But if you were running, you know, things, if you said, well, hey, I've got 5 gigs spare time, and like you on your desktop system right there, you could be running a, you know, a pretty good image generator or ChatGPT bot or something for something. And that is a thing, like, you know, I could see somebody building a network of saying, let's use the inference.
Yeah. At any rate, sorry, I took us on side quest there.
It's what we do, Brian. It's what we do.
And what we do costs cash we get from you. Patreon.com/weirdthings, where you need to go if you want to support the show. Patreon.com/weirdthings. Keep us loud, live, and independent right here on the program. Patreon.com. /weirdthings.
So, Skyquakes, gentlemen.
Sorry? Yeah, this Skyquake. Guy quakes?
Skyquake.
Skyquake? Okay. Skyquake, I'm guessing it's what happens when a meteor it bounces off the atmosphere of Earth, like kind of almost like an arrow breaking, where if it goes fast enough, I could imagine ripples happening all around them. I'm making this up.
Best theory, Brian. It's the best theory I've heard so far.
Wait, so are we measuring skyquakes?
I want you to just Google skyquake.
All right. Skyquake. And, oh, I just went to skyquake.com. Whoops. It's available at GoDaddy. Skyquake is a mysterious phenomenon that is leaving scientists baffled. The image art is exactly what you'd expect. Computer, give me a picture of the sky. It says here, skyquakes might sound a lot like thunder or sonic booms, but they usually tend to come when there's no sign of storm clouds in the area or even signs of aircraft passing through the area. Scientists have tried to come up with multiple explanations for the phenomenon. They remained baffled by the loud booms that often seem to come out of nowhere. These loud booming sounds have been reported all over the world, according to BBC. Depending on the region you're located in, you might know them by a different name. Some people call them fog guns or uminari, which translates to cries.
That was our band. Remember that fog gun?
Fog gun. Skyquake.
Oh my God.
So there, I would be curious what the records are on this, or do they feel them in the air, or just they just hear them?
You hear them, and so there. It's been a phenomenon that's happened for years and years. The problem with social media being is you hear a thing and you don't know if this is a new thing or a thing that happens all the time. But either way, it's kind of like, hey, this is kind of like crazy that this thing happens. What's going on?
Well, here, this is, this appears to be a YouTube video possibly capturing one. I guess this is.
I can't hear anything if something is supposed to be.
I'm not hearing anything at all.
Sorry. It's very quiet, and the audio listeners are hearing it, but it's like a wow in and out. I could try cranking it up, but it's
really. No, if they got it, they got it.
Hopefully, in fact, whoever's in the chat, let us know if you guys were able to hear that. Hopefully, I didn't just broadcast a bunch of dead air.
But, oh my God, this skyquakes are full of crap.
Yeah, this is a lie. Here.
Yeah.
You guys hear that hiss, right? Oh, I just realized the Google Meet probably is filtering it. But it sounds like a...
I think these things are BS, Brian. Hit it up.
So that could be exactly right. Okay, good. At least one person heard it. This seems like an opportunity for a bunch of people to take unrelated phenomenon and call them skyquakes.
Yeah, I think, well, it comes down to is whenever you hear sound, you don't know where it's coming from. And there are different things. You can have atmospheric effects where you're going to hear the sound of traffic or other things echoed away. you know, there's been some debate about how they changed some fuel additives in like shipping fuels or whatever, that that's affected cloud albedo, cloud albedo. And there could be things like something as simple as like, oh, reducing the amount of lead in a thing or whatever. But I don't know if there's any comprehensive database that shows us that these things are increasing or decreasing, you know, because that's, you know, certainly a factor to think about these things is just because we're getting more reports doesn't mean that there's more of a thing, which is often sort of, you know, very well overlooked.
Oh, that's interesting because the... that I forgot that knife cuts both ways. We've talked about before how Steven Spielberg used to believe in UFOs when he did Close Encounters, but he didn't by the time he did War of the Worlds. And the reason was just camera phones. He said, if they were there, then we would be seeing more UFO photos, not fewer. And once he noticed the trend of the fidelity goes up, UFOs go down, then he lost interest. But you're describing the reverse, which is because there are so many more cameras, there's so many odd sounds to capture.
Yeah, we're things that aren't direct. Like, you know, we saw this, I actually write a paper about this. Like we've talked about this before. When I worked with James Randi in the 90s, when little cameras that were electronic or like little like battery operated but film little cameras, you'd get certain kinds of phenomena that come up a lot with the little flash, and you would get certain kinds of streak because of the film they used. When you had the little digital cameras came about, you started to get like the little LED streaks as the frequency. Every time the camera technology changes, the unexplained artifacts changes, and we see that now.
Hey, honey, yeah. New ghost dropped.
Yeah, exactly. With UAPs, like, oh, what do you think of UAPs? Like, well, they all seem to be captured by the same Raytheon thermal imaging system, which tells me something, you know?
That they're not aliens, they're ghosts.
Yeah. Yeah, well, duh, science, man.
Yeah, come on, man.
So, anyhow, be on the lookout for skyquakes, everybody. You never know when Hell that's going
to
happen.
Yeah, I'm tempted to be on the same page as you on this one, Andrew. But on the flip side, like, spent a lot of my life thinking that ball lightning was just a imaginary phenomenon. But it turns out to be quite real.
Well, ball lightning I believed in. I think skyquakes. I think there's a lot of everything to contribute. I don't think they're BS. I think there's reason to think people are hearing this stuff. We know there's all sorts of weird atmospheric phenomena that can happen. And I'm open to even external causes and stuff like, you know, increased amounts of solar radiation, you know, particles, storms, whatever it could be, you know, like I don't think there's going to be a singular cause. I think there's a lot of causes that could be there.
Could be ghosts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're minus all,
everything Andrew said, including what I said.
It's like, it's ghosts of the new plus one.
Like everything we don't know everything that Andrew has reasoned through with science and everything that I said, which is also totally legitimate.
I think the simulation could be real. So I'm you know, somebody says I rode a unicorn, went into a cavern, met a dragon. I'm like, I won't say I 100% think you're wrong.
Yeah, know,
I'm not inclined to believe it because, in my view, that could be true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the like I remember learning about in some science book or other popular science book that, you know, with all the jiggling that molecules do, non-zero possibility that when you punch a wall, all the molecules will happen to lean left and all the wall molecules will happen to lean right and your fist goes right through it. But astonishingly, vanishingly unlikely.
Yeah. Do we want to do picks?
Yeah, dude. This has been an After Things pick again and again and again, but I'm almost done rereading Alchemy by Rory Sutherland. And I think this is my second or third lap, and I'll be danged if there's not bon mots that, you know, maybe I heard them the first time around, but I really am processing them this go around. including a couple of statistical artifacts. Like he takes you through what sounds like a fair proposition that you would say yes to, which is you flip a coin. Every time you flip a coin, your net wealth can go up 50% if you win or down 40% when you lose. And you're like, well, that's, you know, clearly in my favor. And yet the more you flip, the more you head towards $0 net wealth. And specifically, I'm actually making a Modern Rogue short right now. I just have to add a little bit of B-roll, but he calls orchids the plant kingdom's scam artists, pointing out that if you have bees, which are a market, who are in the market for nectar, and let's say you as a plant, you know, he does a lot of assigning agency to things that are not conscious, but I love it because it makes it very narratively sticky. He says, you know, you got bees coming and going. Bees can't investigate every freaking flower. They need to rely on some heuristics. So flowers can choose to spend energy on having bright colors or big petals or what have you. And then hopefully once the bees get inside as customers, they experience delicious nectar because bees gossip. They go home and do their waggle dance to tell other bees this is where the good stuff is. Whereas orchids are the one plant that just totally defaults on that prisoner's dilemma. Orchids are just like, I'm going to spend all my energy on the biggest, most beautiful mimicry, and I'm going to have no nectar inside. I'm going to have no benefit, but they're going to see the flashing lights from a long way away. There are some orchids that exude pheromones that cause bees to try to copulate with the flower. And there are other orchids that, it'll hit me in a moment. One was pheromones, one was mimicry. One gets bees drunk so they can't be bothered to go visit other flowers. That's all. Coincidentally, orchids seem to get pollinated early in the season, but then they get a reputation and bees stop digging them. And as a result, orchids are rare.
I heard somewhere that orchids had like something like way an incredibly large genome compared to other plants, which, you know, might make sense and explain a lot of their weird behavior, that they've got all these sort of crazy mechanisms.
Yeah. Well, at any rate, it's also a short read. I think around 6 hours. Gosh, Alchemy is just a really, really good book.
Yeah. Big fan of the Rory. I follow him on Twitter. He's one of my big follows. I like to see what he has to say. Yeah.
What about you guys? Got any picks?
I'll double down. The Agatha Show, Agatha All Along, a show in which a coven of witches and Bryce Castillo go on the witches' road look, there's thrills and chills, and I give it my highest compliment of a show, which is ever rarer in our streaming age. Every time I think I'm ahead of it, I'm not. They've got something. They got a little twist and turn for me, and I've dug it.
I got two picks for you. One is, I just, you know, it's another movie that, like, it came out, it got like meh reviews, and I wouldn't argue that was totally undeservedly, but it was still such a fun, interesting kind of movie, and that is 13th Warrior.
Ooh. Wait, is that the one based on a Michael Crichton book?
Yeah, the production. So it's based on Eaters of the Dead by Michael Crichton. One of the first books he wrote, actually, I think under his name, which he basically combined the story of Beowulf with the story of a, an Arab poet who went and met the Volga Vikings and said, let me combine these stories. And, you know, that's where he goes on this mission with them all the way to the far north, and they've got to fight the crazies. The production was a John McTiernan film. There's a lot of production problems. Apparently at one point, even Crichton stepped in and actually directed scenes from it.
Oh, wow.
It eventually got completed. Tanu Banderas is in it. Omar Sharif has a small part in it. I just like it. I just like it because it's kind of a neat kind of just story, kind of a telling of a story. It's not, It's for as troubled as the production was, it's still, I found it very entertaining, very engaging. Like, yeah, the characters aren't that well developed. The story's just pretty linear, etc. That being said, I still like the 13th Warrior.
Prime Banderas too. Like that's like that. That's the power peak of Banderas 99.
Right around Assassins and was he in Dust Till Dawn? No. Yeah. Oh, he was doing the sequel to El Mariachi.
He did. Yeah, he did. Desperado.
Yeah.
Antonio Banderas. Yeah. Exactly. From up there, I thought you said Brian Banderas. I'm like, who's this? I'm looking up Brian Banderas.
I just heard it as well. I'm like, the lesser known Banderas.
I want to know more about their legacy.
Brian Banderas.
I literally was looking up Brian Banderas because I said Antonio Banderas. Then he said the Brian Banderas. And the team connect like, just, the robots will never overtake me.
Yeah, wow. It opened number two to Sixth Sense. So it probably would have opened number one if it weren't for that big hit.
Side note for about AI and stuff. I think in the after things, by the way, for our listeners for that, we'll talk a bit more about some of the stuff going on AI in 01. My other pick, which I think we could close with, Brian, I don't know if you got the latest. They just found this. Apparently it was a bootleg and they actually were able to get it and improve the quality. This was the 1970s band Fog Gun and their song Skyquake.
Fantastic. Yeah. Here, let me take a look in here. Here it is. It's Skyquake by Fog Gun. Here we go. Buckle up.
Justin, I'll send it to you in case you want to check this out too.
Yes. Breaking the storms rolling in with shadows that dance in the pale moonlight. Voices are calling, they whisper so dim. A rush of the wild, we're ready to fight. In the heart of the tempest, the echoes will rise. We are the dreamers.
Damn, man, those vocals.
That was great of us. That was really great of us. We did that really, really well.
we made best work was during our German tour when we were snowed in Berlin and locked in the studio there, and we found Hitler's Luger. But that's another story.
Oh, man.
It's been weird.
We're not going to.